You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. Today, we're celebrating Rural Voices Day. We're joining other stations in highlighting the role public radio plays in rural communities, particularly in the wake of federal funding cuts. JPR is fortunate to have strong community support for our local programming that highlights the people, artists, and organizations here in our region of Southern Oregon and Northern California, as well as news, information, and issues important to you, our listeners. Today, we have a roundtable of three guests in the studio to discuss public transportation in rural regions, the pros, the cons, and what the future might hold. My guests are Meg Wade, Executive Director of Peace House, and a 2025 Community Storytelling Fellow with Oregon Humanities. They have spent nearly two decades advocating for mobility justice and reporting on regional transit issues. Welcome to the Exchange, Meg.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
We also have Katrina Ehrman Newton. She's a board member for the Rogue Valley Transportation District, RVTD, and an access services librarian at Southern Oregon University. She brings the perspective of both a policymaker and a longtime transit writer. Welcome, Katrina.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we also have Scott Chansey. He's the transit program director for Josephine County. He has 30 years of experience in public transit, 17 of which have been spent managing Josephine Community Transit. Welcome, Scott.
My pleasure to be here.
So let's get this thing started by having each of you tell me what questions you think people should be asking about public transit in rural regions. And I'll start with you, Scott.
Thank you, Mike. I would say the first question would be, where is it? That should be everyone's first question as to where the public transportation system's operating, where they can see it, those kind of things in their rural community.
Okay, and Katrina?
I'd add to that, am I using it? And if I'm not, why not? How could I potentially use it to save myself some money and make my life a little easier?
Okay, and Meg?
Yeah, I think I'd echo Katrina's, why don't I think about it, right? Why don't I associate the bus with my rural community?
Okay. Well, Meg, you wrote, because you're a prolific writer, you wrote that cars are isolation machines. And you've written about the sensory before and after of choosing the bus over driving. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I'm relatively new to car ownership, just in the last couple of years, and I actually freaked out the first time I ever drove completely solo because I was so cut off from everything. Eventually, I was like rolled down the window, and I realized like, oh, here's all the auditory feedback I get while I walk that like lets me know the place that I'm in, that lets me track people and animals and make sure that I'm you know in the right space. So there was that sense experience, but there's also that social isolation, which I think a lot of us feel when we're in a car where we're moving around other machines and cut off from the community and we're not moving around other people, whereas my experience of being on the bus is really getting to know my community and getting to see who else is there and knowing who gets off at what stop and having a sense of the social life of where I live.
Well, the bus is quite problematic when you start to have vanishing bus lines, like you wrote about the Greyhound stops in Medford, which turned a four-hour drive to Corvallis into a 24-hour odyssey. Tell me about that.
it's really wild. Part of why I moved to the Rogue Valley is because I knew that I could get to other parts of the state on the Greyhound easily, that I thought I wouldn't need to have a vehicle to be able to do that. And then Flix acquired Greyhound a few years ago, and we've seen stops cut. We've seen routes have fewer lines running on them. And Medford, Southern Oregon, and Northern California have all been affected by that. So last year, I tried to get to an event up in Corvallis in February, actually the weekend that it really, really snowed. And I did what you have to do now if you don't have a car to get there, which is to take the Point bus over the mountains, over to Klamath Falls, stay overnight, get on a train going north back over the mountains, right? Get off in Albany, and then take a connector bus. So if you were, say, a university student in Corvallis from Southern Oregon and trying to get to school, that's what you'd be doing just to get to a term there. And then you have to repeat that all in reverse to get home. You have to over the mountains twice with an overnight stay just to get to the northern half of the state.
Well, that costs you both money and time.
Absolutely, a lot.
Katrina, you speak about bus blindness.
Yes.
What is that?
So that is an unfortunate condition where you live in a community that has transportation and for some reason you don't notice it. Before I expand on the woes of bus blindness, I wanted to echo what's part of what Meg said. I am also new to car ownership. It is less than a year that I have owned a car after a 9-year stretch of not owning a car. As soon as I have the opportunity, I stop owning a car because I learned so much more about every place I live by taking the bus. And particularly when I moved here, part of why we felt comfortable moving here is my spouse strictly does not drive. And we felt like we could get back to our family in Humboldt County, California through the bus if he needed to. And losing those has really been, it was a motivating factor to why we now own a car, because we have family that we can no longer reach by these rural routes in an efficient and meaningful way. Bus blindness is, to return to your question, is when people are working in a shop on a street that has a bus that goes by every 30 minutes and they didn't know it was there. I think in rural communities, there's this sense that you have to rely on your car. People have the idea that buses and public transportation really only happen in urban areas. And it's not true, but it's closer to true than I would like, because having an ability to reach those small communities is essential and powerful and really gives people so many opportunities. I think about when I was an undergrad in Humboldt County, California, how much the Redwood Transit made me connected between Eureka, Arcata, Ferndale, outlying communities. I could get places and got to know that area so much more meaningfully than I would have without those opportunities.
Well, that's a good point. Scott, from a management perspective, how does Josephine Community Transit ensure that residents in both urban Grants Pass and the more rural areas are aware of the resources that are available to them?
Well, that's a complicated question, but I wanted to jump back real quick to what Meg said regarding services along I-5. That's something I've been passionate about and working towards, and there is a giant gap, but part of the problem is everyone was relying on Greyhound or some sort of quasi-private-public partnership, and it failed again and again and again, and there was no accountability. So the Oregon Department of Transportation is funding service currently. It hasn't started yet, but it should start here within the next 2 months between Medford and Eugene. So it will stop in Medford, Grants Pass, Roseburg. I think it does stop in Riddle, and then goes all the way to Eugene. So that will provide a connection that's been missing. So getting back to your question in terms of how do you blend your services between an urbanized area, which the city of Grants Pass is an urban area, as well as the rural portions of Josephine County, it's not easy. One of the things that a transit operator needs to come to grips with or come to a conclusion is how do you distribute your resources? So there's two chains of thought of looking at that. One is you give a little bit of service to everyone. So that means everyone within the community or even the rural areas gets a little bit of service. The other side of that coin is you put all of your resources where the service is for that is the highest demand, which would obviously be in the higher population, higher density areas. So it's a constant struggle to figure out what that balance is and what your community needs. So that question alone probably would take about an hour answer, which I know we don't have, but that's probably my basic attempt at it.
My guests are Meg Wade, Katrina Ehrman-Newton, and Scott Chancey. We're talking about public transit in rural regions of Southern Oregon. So talk about the convenience of owning and driving a car, you new car owners, versus the inconvenience of planning our day according to bus schedules and then experiencing the weather while waiting.
Ah, the struggle is real. I noticed when I got a car that I definitely added more errands to my day. I was able to add in some things, but it was also my days got more stressful because driving is stressful. You take your life in your hands and the lives of people around you. in a way that when you're on a bus, you get to trust a professional, which I really enjoy. I also will say that at least in RVTD, there's been a very real effort made to increase the comfort at bus stops because we're cognizant of the weather. And the most frequently used bus stops generally have some kind of rain cover, although it's not ideal. But I think that that inconvenience, the inconvenience that I hear from riders more often is really just getting the timing right. Because when you have less frequent service, especially when you have less frequent service between, they call them like your trunk routes, the routes that give you the opportunity to get from one bus to another that goes to your specific destination. As that route, and in RVTD it would be like the 10, losing the frequency on that route makes it harder for you to make connections. And that risk is what I think pushes people away from making use of those, again, the balancing act that Scott alluded to, that you want to reach as many people as you can, but you only have so many resources, and figuring out where to put them so that then it is still functional, it is still convenient, people are going to make their connections. Then it's like it's a functional service in a way that it, right now it's harder because of all of the funding cuts and the loss of support for certain pieces of that infrastructure.
Well, Medford also is an urban area that has lots of rural areas around it that it needs to service.
Yes, Jacksonville particularly is because of the limited numbers of the rural spaces you have to cross to get into it.
And how do you juggle that? How do you manage that?
Currently, and I'd like to point out that I'm the only person who doesn't have experience in the decades in the room right now. My understanding is that we have a very, we have a commitment as a transit district to make sure that there is always at least some kind of connection to Jacksonville as one of our districts that receives transit service. And then the decision that we made recently was to decrease the frequency of our trunk route, so that we can maintain some of those connecting routes. But that was very give and take because it's like, okay, it exists, but it isn't going to happen as often, and that's going to present its own issues.
Well, you mentioned professional drivers, and that is a luxury to sit back and have a professional driver take you wherever you need to go. At the same time, you mentioned that if you're in your own car, you take your life into your own hands. Do we have any statistics on the number of accidents that happen in the public transit world versus the individual ownership?
I don't have any statistics off the top of my head, but I can just give you some, I guess, basic experience. So the system in Josephine County, we travel 500,000 miles a year. So that's within our system or system-wide. My guess is RVTD probably does closer to a million. And our accidents where a vehicle is actually pulled from service or is inoperable, I think in my 17 years in Josephine County, we've probably had three. So 500,000 miles a year over 17 years, and we've had three accidents that the vehicle is inoperable. So statistically speaking, I can't give you a percentage or whatever, but that's extremely safe.
That is indeed.
And I think we may not have, you know, the exact numbers for, you know, transit crashes, but when we look at the number of just deaths in cars that rural areas experience, it's a much higher rate than urban areas overall, right? Jackson County death rates from motor vehicle crashes are higher than Multnomah County, right? So we have folks really suffering the harms of the car-based system in our rural communities at rates that are more so than in urban areas. And I don't think that's something that we sort of normally recognize or talk about, right? The dozens of folks who die every year in Jackson County because of car crashes.
On rural roads?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
They're harder to drive. They're more likely to have, they're just more challenging roads. There are more frequent changes in elevation, more frequent and extreme changes in driving condition, less lighting, and a real mix of the kinds of vehicles that use it.
And folks have to go farther. They have to drive when they're tired more often, right, because they don't have as many options, right? Transit is really about increasing options for people in our rural communities.
Okay, let's hold it right there. We need to take a quick break. I'll be back shortly with my guests, Meg Wade, Katrina Ehrenman-Newton, and Scott Chansey. I'm Mike Green. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guests are Meg Wade, Executive Director of Peace House. They've spent nearly two decades advocating for mobility justice and reporting on regional transit issues. Katrina Ehrenman-Newton is a board member for the Rogue Valley Transportation District and an Access Services Librarian at Southern Oregon University. And Scott Chansey, he's the Transit Program Manager for Josephine County, where he has spent the last 17 years. He has 30 years overall experience in public transit. So, Scott, let's start with you. On the systems management side, tell me about some of the drawbacks that administrators must manage. For instance, how do you handle safety concerns or the discomforts that passengers might face, such as the noise, the smell, and medical emergencies on board?
Again, that's a very difficult question to answer quickly. I think what, as an administrator, you have to provide your service for as many people as possible. So when you start to make exceptions or, change your service for specific population groups or people or individuals, then you're taking away from the service for everyone else. So it's a balancing act between the two. As far as safety is concerned, that's not really an issue. Obviously, if something happens, our vehicles and our dispatchers and our drivers were all equipped and trained to handle all the kinds of situations. And safety issues are very far and few between. It's making sure that your service can accommodate as many people as possible comfortably. And so it's a constant balancing act between those two in terms of honoring the rights of the individual versus making sure that the entire group can ride comfortably.
Well, I want to look to the future, and I want you all to help me think about this. In your mind's eye, what does the future of rural transit look like if you could wave a magic wand?
I mean, if I could wave a magic wand, I absolutely would not need to own a car because I have to work so much more, so many more hours to sort of actually balance that out here. So I would have the time to be able to take the bus for an evening concert in Medford, for instance, and I'd be able to get to both L.A. and Seattle by bus, right? Like, I'd be able to visit friends up and down the West Coast from our small rural community. I'd be able to do those things.
Yes, and I would definitely love to, like, if I had a magic wand, I would be confident when I say that everyone can ride the bus to get to all of those places, because I wouldn't be concerned about, oh, does Valley Lift have enough vans right now to support people with mobility issues or other kinds of things that keep them from being able to drive or have other options. I wouldn't be worried about, are people with tiny babies going to have enough room for their strollers on the bus? We would have so much storage. We would have cool bike racks. We would have potentially like double-decker buses so that we can move more people on the routes that use the most people. Like, it would be extravagant because, and like cars would all have been like melted down to make all my cool new buses because I'm just not a fan. I admit it. Like, the cars produce more pollution, more injury, and more strain on communities, I think, than they often give back. That may be a little bit of a, that's a Katrina opinion, not anybody else's. But I really would love to see something like that. I think about, like, the ancient tracks of streetcars that were in Medford and the fact that you could just hustle around and get to where you needed to, and people didn't need to decide, am I going to go have a drink after work with my friends? Do I have enough money for a lift? What am I going to do? I would love for those kinds of interactions where you can be together to be easier. And that's one of the things public transportation can do so well.
I think if I had a magic wand, obviously funding would be an issue. But you need to think of it in terms of connectivity. So it's not only connectivity within your community, it's connectivity, especially considering from some of the rural areas within Josephine County, it's a connection between those communities. And so it's not just a one-and-done answer because those services look completely different. So the services connecting rural areas are completely different, or they look different, they operate different than what you would see in an urban environment in terms of providing access to places people want to go. So again, I think it's a I turn everything into a complicated question because maybe I've spent too much time thinking about it. But yeah, that's what my magic wand would be, is making sure that that's an underlying factor in the design of the system.
Well, in a car, it's a straight shot.
Correct.
From Medford to Shady Cove. But if someone in Shady Cove wants to get to Medford for, I don't know, let's say a medical appointment, riding the bus.
There are options, but they're not as easy. There are things like Valley Lift and some paratransit options, and sometimes you can get additional support through medical coverage to help you get to your appointments, but it is significantly more limited. And also, when I think about Shady Cove, they're another part of the services do look different between rural communities and connecting rural communities to urban centers because of the kinds of roads and the kinds of conditions that occur. What comes to mind is Prospect Butte Falls, because when I was working for the public library system, those are our most mountainous branches, and they were the most likely to have staff be unable to go and open the library because of snow and other kinds of conditions. And that also meant that the people in those communities were the most likely to be isolated by snow. And you start to see how all of the different things that go into a functional transportation system feed each other. Buses need snow plows, roads need snow plows, everybody needs snow plows. And it's important to kind of think about it as a shared need and a shared desire for communities to connect and for people to get to where they need to go.
Yeah. So we don't have magic wands, but I do really want to make sure that folks know that we actually do have power over some of the funding that influences our transportation systems. And here in Jackson County, that's especially true because we have the chance to renew the levy that funds Rogue Valley Transit District this spring, right? So that will be on ballots for folks who want to vote this May. And by continuing that levy, we'll be able to potentially bring back the Saturday in evening services that we had to cut this past year, right? So that ability for folks to get to their job on Saturdays. We know that, you know, the majority of folks, I think, taking RVTD are workers trying to get to work, right? Like, we actually have the power to make sure those folks can get to work in the evenings or on the weekend if they need to by approving that levy. So I just want to put a shout out for people to follow that and participate in the spring election.
I definitely want to get into this funding issue. In case you're just joining us, my guests are Meg Wade, Katrina Ernman Newton, and Scott Chansey. We're talking about public transit in rural regions of Southern Oregon. Funding is the big issue.
Mm-hmm.
What does it cost?
A lot.
Yeah.
not to be facetious with that, but you know, getting back to the not just the funding, but the outcome of that funding. So some of the things that were talked about for rural connections, what you lose first was funding is reduced is frequency, and that's how often the bus runs. And so when I was talking earlier about do you give a little bit of service to everyone or focus that effort, in the rural areas or what you see in some of the outlying areas is you get one or two bus trips a day. So somebody has to, you know, focus their entire transportation planning around those one or two trips a day and hope it works out. That's not realistic for people to use. So with the funding, it becomes what are we getting? And it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy, because if you don't fund it, then the worse the service is. And the worse the service is, the less usable it is. And then the less people seem to find value in it. So it's a circular question. But as far as the funding is concerned, or the cost, that's, again, a complicated question. It costs, depending on how you look at it. It's subsidized, obviously. You know, we receive, and most transit agencies receive, 10 to 15% of their total expenses through the fare box. That means that's what the passenger is paying. There's people that question that or say that's not enough. But again, the more that you charge, the less usable it is for people, especially lower income people. So again, it's a very complicated question.
And the way that transit districts are funded is directly tied by statute to prioritizing service to lower income people and some, at least some of the funding. So for certain kinds of funds that come through tax measures or levy measures or federal statute, you have to be doing certain things with your service. Like you have to be connecting to other public agencies and other public entities like health facilities and schools and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot that goes into distributing funding correctly.
One of the things in terms of cost to each individual taxpayer out there, there currently is a payroll tax, an employee paid payroll tax that's all the way across Oregon. So everyone's impacted. That's the cost that everyone's paying right now to support public transportation statewide. It is actually 0.1%. That is what is being charged. And that amount essentially is one penny for every $10 earned. So somebody making, let's say, $50,000 in Josephine County is paying $50 a year. And that $50 is actually the cost of a commuter pass on our system. So for somebody that's not using the system, they're still contributing to the operations of that system. And so that's the current model for funding in Oregon.
Yeah, I think when we talk about what it costs, we really need to think about what we get for that, right? Mm-hmm. Because when we, you know, put a bus on the road, right, we're removing the number of cars that needs to be there, right? So everybody's commute time goes down, right? We're allowing people to say, if we have greater frequency bus service, people can go to preventative medical care, which means it's a huge amount of cost savings for an entire community. And I think that the numbers, like here in Jackson County, I think the majority of businesses are something like within a quarter mile of a bus route.
Correct.
So when you're talking about businesses being able to recruit employees, right, who can get there and having dependable, like, workers arrive on time in the savings to businesses, right, like, that's huge as well. So there's so much that we get for just that one penny per every $10, right, that folks put in, right? We really get huge savings, and especially also when you add in things like less air pollution, right, and fewer folks with asthma in the region. Just we get so much for what we put in.
Meanwhile, the average cost of a car is $20,000 plus, and we're very willing to spend that. You're talking about pennies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think the average cost for the operations of a public vehicle, at least as far as the IRS is concerned, seems like it's close to 65 cents a mile. To operate a private vehicle, that's the ownership cost, maintenance, all those things. So it's considerably less for public transit. And public transit, as more people ride, it becomes more cost effective. And so that's just one of those things that, you know, needs to be considered.
And public transit is starting to use technology as well, mm-hmm. like transit on demand. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that.
So the transit on demand model is we looked at what the TNCs are. Those are transportation network companies known as Uber, Lyft, things like that. We incorporated their model into our own operational operations. And so when someone needs service or there's quote-unquote demand for service, then they basically book the ride. And so that's what we do. I won't say it's more cost effective, but it can be more cost effective than running a bus into areas of low demand because you're only going to send the bus when someone actually needs it.
Can I ask a question about that?
Mm-hmm.
Is this anywhere, or does the person already have to be on like an established route? Like, can the
so you can operate the system in any way that you want. So from a technological perspective, as long as you have a smart device, that we know where you're at. So you can set that up however you want. You can set it up to go from bus stop to bus stop.
That's cool.
You can set it up for bus stop to your front door. All kinds of things. We just operate it blanket wide within our existing service area at night.
Well, we have about 60 seconds left. What do you want people to take away from this conversation?
If you haven't tried taking the bus here in Jackson County, try it. Like, see how far you can go. You might be surprised.
And also, definitely get to know your bus drivers. I have heard this from Julie Brown, the general manager at RVTD, and as a bus rider, I've got to say they're some of my favorite people. They get to know you as a rider, and that is a part of the joy of taking the bus. My cute little kiddo was afraid of the sound that the step makes when they lower the bus, and our frequent bus driver learned that about her, learned her face, and stopped turning it on so that she could feel more comfortable getting on the bus.
And I guess my point is I don't care why you ride, I just care that you ride, and I hope the experience is good.
Okay, well, that's all the time we have. Thank you all for your insights today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My guests were Meg Wade, Katrina Ehrman-Newton, and Scott Chansey.